Welcome to Spiel Chicago, the podcast exploring progressive and thoughtful theater in the Second City. My name is Smyra Yan, and this week I spoke with the co-founders of the new storefront theater company, The Jades, whose mission is to employ and artistically empower as many female-identified artists in Chicago as possible. I am here with the three founding members of the brand new Chicago storefront theater company, The Jades. Would you guys introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Liz Seit. I'm the managing director.
I'm Tegan Walsh-Davis. I am the co-artistic director.
And I am Caitlin Acey, and I am the other co-artistic director.
When we started our interview, Caitlin told me that in their rehearsal room, they got a request to use gender-neutral greetings. You know, like saying folks or everybody instead of guys. So we agreed to carry that over to the podcast, too. Hi, guys.
No, fuck. Start over.
See? It's amazing.
Yeah. Old habits die hard. Anyway, here's the rest of our conversation. First, I want to ask, you've probably been asked this a million times, but how did the company start?
It started last summer after having seen the Hypocrites production of All Our Tragic. Sean Graney had left his business card on all of our chairs, and I was an emotional wreck afterwards, like could not, like inconsolably weeping. He like gave me a hug and he was like, do you want to talk about this at some point? And I was like, yes, please
put me back together.
I'm crying. And so over kind of like several coffee meetups, a lot of the conversation that I kept coming back to was like going on these audition websites and finding that there were very limited amounts of women's roles. And oftentimes you run across, and this is across the board, this is, you know, Equity, this is SAG-AFTRA, like the breakdowns that we were seeing had these extensive big paragraphs about the male characters, whereas the descriptors for the female characters were coming across as a buxom redhead or an exotic so-and-so or the dumpy girl next door. I want a description of a female character that is as complex and difficult as I'm seeing these male characters. So that conversation kept coming up in the room with Sean, and eventually he looked at me, he's like, why don't you start a theater company? And I was like, ha, 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 surely you jest. And then he said, who would you want to start a theater company with? And my first thought was Tegan, and I approached Tegan, and Tegan and I sat down with Sean, and then we all sat down, and they were like, well, you need a managing director. Who do you want to be our managing director? And Tegan immediately jumped in, and Liz became our managing director.
I was like, Liz, please give me Liz.
Please help us. So that is the medium length story of how it all started. And it started out seemingly selfishly of like, well, we want to perform because we want cool, difficult characters that we can play, or, you know, a platform in which we can produce plays that we've written or whatever. And it ended up kind of blossoming into this, this platform for female-identified artists in Chicago, meaning directors, actors, playwrights, dramaturgs, designers, you know, everybody involved in the theater world who is female-identified. And then it kind of branched out from there because, like our pencils say, intersectionality or death, that we started including people from the queer community, from the transgender community, from, you know, non-identifying people. And the response has been really cool.
How have you been incorporating those voices? Because on your website it says diverse and underrepresented voices, and everyone in this room is a white lady. So how do you go about?
Yeah, I am actually not fully white.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm Middle Eastern as well. So that is something that I, in this process, am learning to speak up about. Is like I am a Middle Eastern person as well. So yeah, that's kind of cool.
But yeah, I mean, I think it sort of started with the recognition of like, yes, we are all predominantly white, or at least white, you know, appearing. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we need to be very conscious of, and we need to be conscious of the fact that like we are in this position where we happen to start this company and we now are working towards having this platform. And I think, I mean, the thing that I always think about being an ally, or being a good ally at least, is like, if you have a space that you can give to people, it's about learning when to give people that space and then sit down. And also we're recognizing that, you know, we need a lot of people to make this kind of idea work. Like, it needs to not just be us, and it needs to not just be our friends, but we need to be reaching out further and further and getting more people and more different types of voices. And so we've been very conscious of, you know, not just settling for the first people that we encounter. Even for this particular show, like, we realized, we put out a casting call and we specifically needed three Latinx actors, and we just put out an open call listing all of the characters, and four of the characters are like racially nonspecific. And so we were realizing that we've got, you know, if you put out an open call like that, okay, now I have 100 emails in my inbox of submissions from people, and 80 of them are white girls under the age of 25. Yeah. Like, and that's not to say anything. I mean, obviously, it's weird to say as a group of 20-something white women, like, mm-hmm. we don't want any white girls.
Right,
but.
And that speaks again to that, like, there are not roles for women, like, that are there. So, exactly. Like, of course these people are reaching out for things that maybe don't fit them as well as it should, because, like, they're looking for something.
We realize, I think, in the casting process also that in putting out these calls and reaching out to the people we knew, that our circle was not as wide as we thought it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and definitely. We, as white and white-passing women, didn't know enough people, and it was like, that's not anyone else's fault but our own, and it is our job to cast the net wider, to integrate ourselves into these communities, so that when we do produce stories that are about certain, you know, groups of people, certain cultures, that we have the resources and we have the people available that we already know, and we don't have to vet people and prove anything because we already have had these relationships and these interactions.
It was a somewhat arduous audition process because we did recognize that we had to keep looking, and so it one put it in sort of stark relief to me of how much work that actually is, and how it just sort of illuminated to me that the companies who say, well, like, we're just casting the people who show up, it's ultimately laziness. Mm-hmm. Because it's not that it can't be done, it's just that it's more difficult and it takes more time and more effort. But if you're not willing to take that time and put in that effort, you should not be doing that play.
If you're not in the Chicago theater scene, you may not have heard much of the conversation about race and casting that's been going on. And that's what Tegan's referencing here. Porchlight Musical Theater, for example, faced a lot of backlash after giving the role of Usnavi, a Dominican character, in the musical In the Heights, to a white actor. Some people didn't think it was a big deal. Some people were really upset. A town hall meeting was held by Victory Gardens Theater and the Alliance of Latinx Theater Artists Chicago, and the discussion was productive, but it didn't yield easy answers. One thing that Porchlight said, which was kind of a legitimate concern, is like, we put out a call for Latinx performers, mm-hmm. and then people showed up and we didn't ask them. We didn't ask them for their card. And that doesn't excuse it away, but it is a complicated issue or an interesting challenge.
It's hard because then it becomes a legal issue because you are not actually legally allowed to do that. Right. Like, you can't do that.
It turns into, like, discriminatory it is. Casting procedures.
It is. And that, legally, if you're running a company, is not something you can do.
It is. And I think that, because that also comes down to, aside from legal issues and issues of rudeness, I mean, it comes down to the issue of kind of making assumptions about what someone from a particular ethnic group is supposed to look like or what you imagine they should look like. Right.
Mm-hmm. Case in point.
And so that's something that gets thorny too. But I think we're reaching a point as a community where we, at least, and I know one of the resources that we used when we were casting this play is there is now a Chicago Actors of Color database that was put together by MJ Gavino from the Chicago Inclusion Project and Bear Bellinger. And it's a really useful tool because it essentially allows actors of color to self-identify and put out, like, these are the ethnic groups that I identify with, this is how to get in contact with me. And so it's put into a database. And so essentially, if you are looking specifically to cast actors of color, you can contact them, give them the breakdown of what you're looking for, and they will send you the contact information for actors that have self-identified as such. The resources are so vast. You just have to recognize when you don't have them at your disposal and go find them.
And ask yourself why you don't have them at your disposal, mm-hmm. and what that means for you to take responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm. I asked Tegan, Caitlin, and Liz about their theatrical background. Caitlin is primarily a performer. Tegan focuses on writing now, and Liz has done some of the administrative stuff before, but never on the scale that they're working now.
So with all of that, what was it like to start a theater company from the ground up?
Very humbling.
Yeah, it's been difficult. I mean, I won't lie about that part. And it has definitely, I think, forced a lot of us out of our comfort zones and forced a lot of us to recognize, okay, we don't know how to do this, but it has to get done. So we're going to have to figure it out.
I mean, I won't lie. There's like a morning imposter syndrome attack. Like,
oh yeah. All of us
day.
Have it.
We all have it for different reasons.
I have an incredible fear of asking people for money. Like, and theater takes money. It's real expensive. And I'm the managing director. My job is to get us money to do stuff. Like, I can't do my job if I'm afraid. Like, in my heart, I'm always like, I'll just do it myself. I won't inconvenience anyone. I'll just take care of it myself, and then we'll be fine.
The same way.
Mm-hmm. So that's been a big hurdle for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the most, because, I mean, as I was sort of saying, I'm absolutely the same way. Like, I have a deep-seated terror
of asking people. I think we all do.
Yeah.
Right.
This seems like a very gendered issue.
Oh, it absolutely is.
It's driving me 100%. Up a wall that it's like, this is a thing that would not bother maybe like a male colleague of mine who was in like the same position that I was, like, would not have a problem being like, no, we need money to do the theater. Like,
yeah,
I am so afraid of asking for help because I'm the one that gives the help, and like, here we are.
Carry yourself with the confidence of a mediocre white man.
Yes. Yes.
That quote is by writer Sarah Hagee. I couldn't remember while we were recording, but I thought that you should know.
Very successfully. But yeah, I think we've throughout this process, all of us have kind of recognized a lot of the internalized sexism that comes up when all of a sudden you are a woman in a position of leadership. And it's stuff that you don't really think about until you have to. A lot of the time, but that's been a big wake-up call for us, is realizing all of these things about how we sort of minimize ourselves and how we don't feel like we have the right to be in these positions or to ask for things or to
be in the way.
Yeah, or to be in the way specifically.
Yeah.
So that's been an interesting and difficult process that will continue to be a process of dismantling those systems, because I feel like it's easy to, or quote unquote easy to fight sexism and sexist norms when they're in other people or when they're in like society at large, but when you're recognizing that it's something in yourself that you have to completely deprogram, that is a tougher task.
Yeah.
And it's a more important task, but it definitely takes more effort than just throwing that anger outwards, because you have to think about it in a more productive way.
Tell me a little bit about An Almanac for Farmers and Lovers in Mexico.
Yeah, so An Almanac for Farmers and Lovers in Mexico is a play by Kate Tarker, and it was on the 2015 Kilroy's list. The Kilroy's are a group based out of, I believe, L.A., of female theater artists, directors and producers and actors and playwrights, who essentially publish a list of the best un- or underproduced plays by women and trans playwrights for that year. It was a way for them to ensure that artistic directors around the country no longer could use the excuse of like, well, I just haven't read any good plays by women. I don't know where they are, because they're there, you know, right. And they've got a list of the finalists, and then they have a list of honorable mentions, and it's just tons and tons and tons and tons of plays. And this was one of the first plays that we read. And
it was like one of the like top five of the first that we read. We read probably 35 to 40 plays.
Yeah. All the ones that we could immediately get our hands on. And this one, it struck all of us really strongly. It's essentially the story of the play is, it's about this young woman named Flora, who is an American expat who is living in Mexico in San Cristobal de las Casas, and she is an anthropologist, and she's there and she's getting ready to get married. Her fiance is Mexican, and it is 3 days before her wedding, and he turns into a hummingbird. You know, like you do sometimes before a wedding. So needless to say, this is a magical realist play. But it's essentially, so it's about her and dealing with her fears and anxieties about getting married and about this literal physical transformation of the person that she loves. And so it's a fascinating play, and it's so fun, and so there's so much joy and so much excitement in it, and also so much fascinating magic and stage directions that you read and you go, I don't know how we're going to do that, but I can't wait to see what it looks like.
On the intro page, it says that everything moves at the speed of fun, because Kate comes from a clowning background. Actually, she and I are in similar pedagogies that my clowning professor was taught by her clowning professor. Mm-hmm. So we kind of speak the same clown language. So it is actually she calls it a comic ballet. So it has a lot of elements of this red nose mask clowning, which is very fun because it's magical realism plus red nose mask plus this like beautiful poetry. So it's got this kind of all encompassing vibe to it.
Our show runs Friday through Sundays at the Frontier at 1106 West Thorndale. And we are actually going to be running a small sort of informal staged reading series during that time on Thursday nights called Jade Smash, which was our first idea. And then we just liked
what
it.
What are we so going to call this? Jade Smash.
Jade Smash. First and only idea.
So we're still in the process of taking submissions and choosing plays for that. But essentially, we're going to be doing a small staged reading series where we choose three plays. It's going to be three Thursday nights, October through November. And we're going to be working on the plays of local female identified playwrights. We're essentially going to be taking their scripts, putting them in a room with a director and a cast chosen by that director. They're probably going to have a couple of rehearsals, and then we're going to do a sort of low rent staged reading, and then we'll have a discussion with the audience and give them feedback if it's work that they're still developing, and get their work heard by an audience, which I think is going to be another cool thing for us.
And if you want more information about our company, you can visit our Facebook page, which is just The Jades, or visit us at thejades.org.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Tegan, Caitlin, and Liz for coming by and chatting with me. I had a great time, and I'm super excited to see An Almanac for Farmers and Lovers in Mexico. You can find links to everything we talked about on our show page, and like Caitlin said, you can find more info about the Jades by searching for them on Facebook, Twitter, and visiting them at thejades.org. If you have any questions, comments, or rants about this episode, you can email them to spielchicago, that's S-P-I-E-L, Chicago, at gmail.com, or tweet at spielchicago on Twitter. See you at the theater.
I went to a performing arts high school, but like before I got there, like I was like, I think I want to be an actor. I feel like that's the thing I want to do. And like,
is that how you talk back
that's
then?
That's how I talk. Okay, young Liz
was like a New York street urchin.
Yeah, I was a newsie.
I knew it.
Before she became my business,
I knew
manager.
You were Christian Bale in another life.
Guys,
you're listening.
Cats.
You were in Cats.
No, I wasn't in Cats.
Oh,
cats.
God.
No, I just have a lot of cats.
Just
no, I just have cats on the brain. Yeah, no,
bit.
There's a cat in this room now.